Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
Yo and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah! On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
No Paul Gallant today. This is day two of the trade. Lakers sending me to Joe for Paul Gallant. So day two of Branham and George. Happy to have you with us this afternoon. Joe, I am a little late getting in. I'm used to this. 12:03, we were supposed to start at noon. This is my old show,
yeah.
The Killer Bees. We're used to starting 3 minutes late, Joe.
What is that supposed to mean?
You know what it means. You've been in radio long enough to know what that means.
You're taking shots?
Yeah, of course.
You started yesterday taking shots at AJ?
Also, yeah,
I don't think he moved the truck, by the way. So you're taking shots. He didn't even fix his problems.
That's embarrassing for him. Says more about him than it does me.
Well, today it wasn't our fault. I'll put it that way. I'm not gonna drive the bus over anyone today. But it was not Brian and I's fault today.
I am an equal opportunity hater, as you know. Anybody can and will get it. I'm not complaining. I'm just teasing you a little bit. I do feel sorry for you, actually. Brian behind the glass, Joe George, Jeremy Branham and George, day two, post-trade. Brian with us today. Still to be determined where Brian's going to land, but he's with us this afternoon. I feel bad for you, Joe. It's why I didn't want to be too harsh with you early in the show. I kind of want to see where you're at. I want to kind of take your temperature. This Thursday night football game, I forgot it was on. I'll be honest with you. It's been a crazy week. Christmas, there was two Christmas games. I had a dinner yesterday, delicious, delicious dinner. So I got home and I was looking at Twitter and it's like, oh, this game's in the second half. I was like, oh, I forgot that it was Thursday. I forgot that Thursday night football existed this week. I didn't look like I missed much. I feel bad for you, man. Like, I've watched, I guess, a half of Chicago Bear football this year. You've probably watched, 16 games in totality?
I've watched
maybe more than once.
Every game, yeah.
I feel really bad for you. Like, that is a hard team to watch play football right now.
It's a hard team to root for, Jeremy. Like, it's not a franchise that, like, there's a lot to be overly excited about. I mean, I'm still very bullish on Caleb and his future and Roma Dunze specifically, but, like, it's just so hard. I don't know how to say this without sounding like it's just a terrible person, Jeremy. I don't know how to say this. Until like the 100-year-old woman dies that runs the team, like nothing's going to get fixed. Like it's just the reality. Like Virginia McCaskey, like she's been alive for what, 8 of the 9 Bears championships because she's that old, and they haven't won one since 1985, and her kids don't want the team. The guy, her son George, who runs it right now, is a self-admitted not a football guy. He started running the team in 2010. They've made the playoffs twice since then. They fired Lovie Smith. They fired 5 coaches. They've drafted 3 quarterbacks in the first round. Like, yeah, things are bad. Like, I get it. Like, it's not an enjoyable experience being a Bears fan. It's miserable most of the time, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was a tough watch. And looking at it from maybe like the Houston perspective, like this game might have been the least important Thursday night game from a Houston perspective all year, because you're not worried about the Bears. Seahawks, I mean, obviously you're not really worried about the Seahawks either, but you look at it from like just a 20,000 mile view looking at this game. Did Al Michaels say that Bill O'Brien was up for the Bears job?
Yeah.
I saw Meltzer tweeting it.
Yeah, he. There was a couple weird moments in the broadcast last night. That was one of them that we should focus on. Like, yeah, he just started rambling names, and he mentioned Bill O'Brien, and that's been reported.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
But
AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
Nowhere has been reported that. Now look, Paul is a really good friend. He is doing his best to convince me to not be a Bears fan. I've never considered wavering off of it, like, ever. That might do it for me.
No, you shouldn't waver off being a Bears fan. That's your team. Like, you grew up with that team.
Bill O'Brien might be too far. Like, of all the things that they could do, they've hired a guy from Canada. They've hired like Matt Nagy, all these disastrous coaches, John Fox, and Bill O'Brien to develop Caleb Williams. I don't think there's any reality to it. I think Al was just literally rambling names. No one's reported that. Like, no one's confirmed it. Even like none of like the big like national reporters even acknowledged it. Yeah. After like, I thought someone was going to debunk it right away and be like, "No, that's not the case." The only counter to that, like, they're in these production meetings. Like, they're meeting with Ryan Poles. They're meeting with Kevin Warren this week, I would imagine, to get some insight on the Bears. Like, are they throwing out Bill O'Brien's name as someone that they're considering? I don't think so.
I don't know if you meet with the general manager during production meetings, though. Like, maybe in this situation it might be different because, like, it's an interim coach and they're going to get a new coach.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess it's on the table. I would say that it's pretty low that they're meeting with the general manager. Now, maybe just, like, a conversation over, like, the media dining, you know. So it wouldn't surprise me if they cross paths, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I found that interesting. I don't know if it's actually real or if it was just, like you said, Al Michaels rambling. I would actually be here for it. I would be entertained. And I think that you're being a little harsh on Bill O'Brien, the head coach. Like, you're mentioning all those coaches that, you know, have been in infamy for the Chicago Bears. Bill O'Brien would be better than all of them. He has a better resume than all of them, except for probably Lovey. And even he probably has a better winning percentage than Lovey, I bet.
No, I don't think he does. But there's a big difference. It's a real division. Like there's three teams in the North right now that are very, very good at football. Like, it's nothing like what he went through in the doesn't matter AFC South championships, Brian. Like,
doesn't matter, Brian. AFC South champions 2 years in a row, Brian.
He does?
Yeah, Bill O'Brien's above 500, 52-48, 520 win percentage. Lovie Smith is 92-100. 479.
Can I take out Tampa Bay? What if you take out Tampa Bay?
Okay, well, now you're moving the goalpost.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. No.
That's exactly what you're doing.
No. We're talking about Tampa Bay, a year in which they didn't have Jameis Winston, and the year in which they did, and he got fired, and a year with the Houston Texans and Jack Easterby.
I mean, Jameis Winston would be better than maybe every quarterback that Bill O'Brien had.
Not as a rookie.
I don't know.
No, he was not good as a rookie. They won like four games that year.
You are moving the goalposts. But if you just went Chicago and you wanted to create the narrative that supports your argument, Joe, Lovie Smith was 81-63, 563 win percentage in Chicago, which still isn't tons better than Bill O'Brien.
No, it's not.
Quite frankly. Like, if we want to play the we'll eliminate this season game, well, let's eliminate the season Bill O'Brien got fired and went 0-4. He's 52-44 now. Now, all of a sudden, that's close to a 563 win percentage?
Yeah.
Somewhat close?
Yeah. Lovie got fired in a 10 win season.
I don't think Bill O'Brien would be the worst thing that could happen. And in like grooming young quarterbacks, no diddy. He was with Brady. He helped Deshaun Watson. The best that Deshaun Watson has ever looked in his NFL career was with Bill O'Brien, hands down, no doubt about it. I think that Bill O'Brien's a decent ball coach, quite frankly. Keep him away from the front office. Maybe don't let him talk to the media, like all of those things. Don't let him like get any sort of power when it comes to roster management, but you can do far worse than Bill O'Brien as a football coach.
I don't totally disagree with that. I think for this opportunity, it's the wrong one. Like, if you want to sell me the idea of Bill O'Brien being back in the NFL, I mean, I know Schefter went on McAfee this week and he dropped his, you know, prediction of 7-9 coaches being fired to 6-7 this year. So it seems like guys like Mike McCarthy have saved their jobs. Like, if you want to tell me like Bill O'Brien's gonna be the head coach in the New Orleans Saints next year, I don't think that's a terrible idea. I mean, I think it's gonna get Boston College to like bowl games and things like that, and it seems he may be okay with that. But I don't know. Do you think Bill O'Brien ends up back in the NFL? Like, as
I would
a head
bet,
coach?
I would bet no. I don't think that he'll. I don't think he'll ever be a head coach in the NFL again. I don't feel like it really went well for him. Like, he got fired, obviously, like middle of the season. Bounces back with Nick Saban, right? That was immediately his next job, right? Nick Saban as an analyst or whatever, and then eventually was the offensive coordinator for a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't go back to the NFL, right? Like, he was the OC at Alabama and then went to Boston College. He didn't have a trip to the NFL, did he?
No,
I'm not missing anything here, am I?
No, he went back to New England
He was the OC. He was the OC. Yeah. That's right. Like, I felt like if he was going to be an NFL head coach again, he needed to parlay an NFL OC job into an NFL head coaching job. I don't think going to Boston College is going to get him back in the NFL. Like, the only path for him now would be to turn around Boston College, maybe take like a better college job and then have that college job lead him back to the NFL. I don't really feel like he's anywhere close, and I don't think it's attainable, quite frankly.
No, because I don't think he's going to elevate like Boston College to a point where he's going to get people knocking on his door asking him to come coach at, I don't know, like Tennessee down the road, or like I don't see that. They're a lowly ACC school.
He's got him to a bowl though. I mean, he got him, yeah. Like he did a decent job there.
No, I think he did a great job. Like he already ran off his quarterback too in the transfer portal because he didn't want to play him. So
that's
like,
not a surprise. Yeah, Bill O'Brien running people off.
I think that's where I wonder like what the biggest struggle will be for Bill is like is keeping kids on campus for 3 years, which is like the problem that all college coaches are facing, but. I don't know if Teapot Bill will work very well. I think I could see him back in the NFL. Like if he has to do the OC jump first. Like I don't think he'll go back as a head coach. If I was Bill O'Brien, my number one advice would be stay away from North Carolina, though. Like do not like stay away from Bill Belichick. Don't go back to that well. If for some reason Boston College doesn't work out, and like don't coach for Steve Belichick, don't do any of that stuff. If you're gonna go to the NFL, try to find someone that's gonna make you a name for yourself that's outside of the Belichick regime.
Yeah, he's gonna have to carve out a new name for him. Seattle perspective, whatever. They keep their playoff hopes alive. It's weird how good they are. Well, I mean, good is relative, I guess. It's weird that they're 6-1 away and they're bad at home. That's weird to me. I'm kind of looking at receivers already from like a Texans perspective of who they could potentially target in the offseason because I think that there's going to be a need for receiver. You have Nico Collins, John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson under contract, and that's it. Like, I'm not counting on Tank Dell returning next year. Stephon Diggs will be a free agent. So, like, you're going to have to add to wide receiver. We know that Nick Caserio was targeting Keenan Allen. Is he too old? Is there any scenario that exists where you'd be okay with Keenan Allen as a Houston Texan next year?
I think he's had more drops this year than I think I've ever remembered. I mean, I don't know. I guess I wasn't watching Chargers games like locked in like I've been watching all the Bears games this year. I think he's looked fine. Like I don't think he's been, you know, if he reportedly wants to get $20 million. Now he also has said, you know, he said to the ESPN Chicago station that he wants to be in L.A. or Chicago next year. So I don't know if it's already, like, done deal. Like, he wants to be a Charger, a Ram, or a Bear, or he's going to – but, like, maybe he'll open his mind to other situations. I think it would make sense. Like, you're going to need probably two wide receivers this offseason. To be honest, though, I'd rather bank on, you know, a recovering Stephon Diggs for a much cheaper price. And
you think he'd be cheaper than Allen?
Coming off an ACL, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he really hasn't done much different than what Allen was doing this year. They're mostly successful in short yardage situations. They're not really pushing the ball down the field. I mean, Keenan had a 45-yard touchdown last week, and we didn't see that from Diggs at all this year, really. So I think I'd rather roll the dice with Diggs, to be honest, like and just try to fix the – I mean, look, the way that Caserio reconstructed his contract, he's $16 million in dead cap next year and $4 million the next 3 years after that. So if you re-sign him before what is – I think it's March 1st, you can fix some of that dead cap space even and, you know, reallocate it elsewhere to try to give yourself a little more room next year. So I lean bring Diggs back over bringing Allen, personally. If you're going to talk Bears wide receivers, I'd trade for DJ Moore.
Yeah, I just don't think that's realistic. Like Keenan Allen's going to be a free agent. Like he's attainable. Whereas DJ Moore, like what is the price tag on DJ Moore? At least a first, probably a first.
Yeah,
like,
first
can you get him for a second and sweeteners. I don't know.
I would say second sweeteners because I think he demands a trade this offseason. It's one of my hot takes.
And you also got to pay him, which the Texans don't have tons of money to spend in the offseason. Like I think they need to be value shopping at wide receiver. And the Diggs contract stuff with the salary cap makes tons of sense. It might be, for me, whichever one makes more financial sense between Diggs and Allen.
I'd be fine. Like I think both those guys, I mean, really. And honestly, you could even look at – he didn't have a huge impact game last night, but what's Tyler Lockett's situation? Like, would he be an option too? He's obviously had a less than stellar year than with Seattle, but he's kind of in that, like, you know, bargain bin veteran shopping wide receiver range of, like, these kind of guys we're talking about.
He's the oldest of the three. He's also the littlest – of the three. Yep. Like, he's not much smaller than Diggs, but like I want a possession guy. Like, and I don't really view Lockett, and maybe that's unfair of me, but I don't really view Lockett as good of a possession guy as Allen and Stephon Diggs. Like, I want a guy who can catch the ball in traffic a little bit, you know? And Diggs isn't a massive guy, but Diggs has really, really good hands, like top-level hands. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Day two, post-trade of Branham and George. We got a busy show for you. Stack show. Adam Ronis. Look, it's championship week in fantasy. You want to win? Yeah, you do. Adam Ronis at 1 o'clock to help you win a championship, to bring a championship home. John Scott, former attorney general. He wants to bring betting, sports betting, to Texas. We'll talk to him at 1:30. Everybody wants that. DJ BNMA at 2 o'clock, talking all things Texans. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP. Listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on Twitter at ESPN975. Joe is at Joe George Radio on the Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Here's a question I have for you guys. 713-780-3776. How do you get CJ Stroud back on track next season? 713-780-3776. It's Branham and George on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
This is ESPN 97.5.
You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
How do you get C.J. Stroud back on track next season? 713-780-ESPN. I asked this to my Twitter followers, at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. I am an influencer of one social
media. Just throw this crap out there to get clicks.
Yeah. Yeah, that soundbite doesn't really paint Granato in a great picture. He's very aggressive, very mean, and it's not clicks anymore, Granato. It's engagement. You're showing your age, quite frankly. 713-780-ESPN. How do you get C.J. Stroud back on track next season? But the reason that I said that I posted on my Twitter was not to gain a follower or two. It was because there were a few comments that were like, next season? How about this season? So maybe start there. Can you get C.J. Stroud back on track this season, Joe?
I'm going to say no, unfortunately. I don't see it that like something's going to magically get fixed this year. You're not going to fix the offensive line. Deontay Johnson doesn't solve your wide receiver problems. Dalton Schultz isn't magically going to start running fast again on the field. CJ's not going to stop looking like he's scared of what's happening around the pocket all of a sudden, you know, even if he doesn't play this week. Like, he's not going to show up against the Pittsburgh Steelers with TJ Watt coming off the corner and like feel like everything's fine and dandy with this offensive line. So, honestly, I think the answer to me for this season is an easy not happening.
Yeah, I do too, and that's why I phrased the question that way, next season, because I think next season's attainable. I think it's realistic, whereas I don't think this season is realistic. Do I think that they can win a wild card game? Yeah. Do I think they can go to Arrowhead and be competitive and maybe even like sneak out a win? I actually think that they can. I think it's possible. I think they would have to do it with defense, though. I think it would have to be a 17-13 type of win where you do just enough offensively and the defense carries you. So I'm not even ruling that out. But in terms of C.J. Stroud getting back into like that MVP, top five quarterback conversation, what will it take to get him back there, where he was at the start of the year, where a lot of ignorant people were calling him a top five quarterback in the NFL, a lot of dummies, a lot of people that had no idea what they're talking about when it comes to football were claiming that C.J. Stroud was already a top five quarterback. He was in the MVP conversation. How do you get him on track next season for that?
I think it starts with the offensive line. He has to feel more comfortable next year, because I think the biggest thing with C.J., for me, is just how uncomfortable he looks in the pocket right now, that he's missing throws this year that he wasn't missing last year, throws that I don't think he was missing at Ohio State. He looks timid to me in the pocket. So you have to rebuild his confidence. And I think the only way to rebuild the confidence with the offensive line is putting in new faces in there. Because frankly, I think if you just come back next year, Jeremy, with, you know, Tunsil and Howard and Shaq Mason and Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson and Kenyon Green, like some combo of those guys, that, well, why would CJ feel any better? He's just going to be thinking about this last season every time he drops back, every time he steps on the field. So I think the first step for me is the easiest one, which is change like at least 2/5 of your offensive line.
Okay, so about 40% of that offensive line. It's weird to me, like, where to assign blame, because I'm with you. Like, it's fixed the offensive line. This year, they're one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. Last year, somehow, they were above average. Like, it's weird how, with a bunch of misfits, they were above average in offensive line play last year, and this year they're below average. It's kind of a mystery, quite frankly. It's why it's tough for me to assign blame. Like, everybody, well, Chris Strausser's the problem. He's the reason that you can't get Laremy Tunsil, a top-five left tackle. Tytus Howard, who was a first-rounder, and you paid top-five right tackle money to. Juice Scruggs, a second-rounder. Kenyon Green, a first-rounder. Shaq Mason, who's a solid veteran. That it's Chris Strausser's fault that this offensive line is terrible. But then who do you give credit for last year whenever you had a top 15 offensive line with a bunch of journeymen that were filling in for injured players, and it seems like you were getting injured players all year long. So, like, if you want to give Chris Strausser blame this year, I feel like you also have to give him credit last year. Like, I felt like he did a good job, whereas this year it doesn't feel that way. So it's tough for me to assign where the blame is. Is it an offensive line that we've just overrated in terms of talent? Is it Chris Strausser, who's a bad offensive line coach, although he seemed like he was a good offensive line coach last year? Is it Bobby Slowick, who is the CEO of offense? To me, it's very difficult to assign blame. I think they've been bad in all areas. I think Strausser's had a bad year coaching. I think the offensive line probably is inflated in terms of talent. C.J. Stroud's not helping the offensive line, which the offensive line isn't helping him. You've had tons of injuries with your skill guys. So it's tough. But for me, you have to make C.J. Stroud's life easier. And I do think it starts with the offensive line. Now, what do you change amongst that offensive line? I'm ready for wholesale changes. Because I can't figure out what the issue is, whether it's coaching or whether it's talent, but I know that it's killing C.J. Stroud and they've produced one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, I'm ready for wholesale changes. At least, at minimum, a new offensive line coach. I would make drastic changes to the personnel on the offensive line. Like, whoever you're bringing in as the offensive line coach, you need to give him full control and power of who he wants to bring in. And obviously, he's not going to be the guy negotiating the contract, but you need to lean on him and the type of players that he wants to fit his scheme, which is where Slowick comes into play, too, if he's still here. Like, he needs to be on the same page with that offensive line coach. Strausser's never coached in this scheme, so it's very round peg, square hole. Like, if you've had a Strausser as the offensive line coach who's never coached in a Slowick San Francisco type scheme, that to me isn't going to have great fit, which in my mind doesn't lead to great productivity. So the offensive line coach, OC, whoever they are, they need to be aligned, they need to be on the same page, and I want to give that offensive line coach as much control as you can, bringing in the players he wants. So if you think that, you know, Tytus Howard is going to be a cap casualty because you can save some money by getting rid of Tytus Howard as a June 1st cut, do it. If you think that you can get, you know, a huge return for Laremy Tunsil, do it. Like, I don't care at this point. I'm ready to blow it all up because, oh, well, you can't trade Laremy Tunsil. He's protecting the investment. Well, then why is this offensive line one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL? I agree that Laremy Tunsil can be a top five left tackle, but he's currently leading an offensive line that's a bottom five offensive line. So I'm in favor of wholesale changes across the board, whatever it takes to get this offensive line better. And I think that's step one to fixing C.J. Stroud for 2025.
I'm also in favor of wholesale changes. I wouldn't go as far, though, to say it, to blow it up to the degree of moving Laremy Tunsil, not because any of what you said isn't true, but because I just don't think this team has the flexibility with their assets and the salary cap to basically make five changes on the offensive line. So from just a practicality standpoint, I would be looking to probably replace three guys. I mean, just make it the interior, left guard, center, and right guard. Make wholesale changes there and then stick with your tackles, whether that be Fisher or Tytus Howard. But I'd like to go a step further on the coaching side because you mentioned the offensive line coach, and certainly that deserves a change of the guard considering what this season's looks like. But I'd go further. I'd make a move with Bobby Slowick as well. I say that knowing the likelihood of D'Amico making that change is 5%, 10%, it's very, very low. But I think sometimes, especially in sports, and you could say it in the business world too, when the results are failing, when the product is failing, even if you think a guy is good at what he does, you just have to change the people involved. Because if you go into the next season, if you're going to tell the outside world, you know, everything's fine, we got things together. But if you're running it out there with basically the same people at the top making those decisions, it's going to be hard to believe yourself that everything's going to be different when the same people are making the same decisions. So, I mean, I wouldn't stop at offensive line coach. I'd replace Bobby Slowick as well.
Yeah, I'm probably there too. And I think that I want a coordinator who has NFL head coaching experience. I think that could help D'Amico Ryans as well, because it doesn't seem like D'Amico really helps out a whole lot with the offense. Like, he doesn't really take the ownership of the offense like he does the defense, and rightfully so. Like, I don't think it's a problem. I've heard some people be critical of him about that. I don't need him to do that. Obviously, you're the manager of the team, but I think having a guy with head coaching experience leading the offense would be something that would get them playing with more command, more fluid. The operation would be better. So I'd be in favor there, too. Like, I'm in favor of anything on the offensive side of the ball. And while I agree that Laramie isn't likely to be moved, I think it's very unrealistic, and I'm not even sure like the cap damages of doing that. It could bring you two starters on the offensive line, because like clearing that money, if it makes sense with the cap, I don't know how much of it would be dead hit and all that stuff. You could replace one offensive lineman with the value, with the financial value of unloading him. And then I would imagine that the return would be solid. Like, I don't know how good of a return you could get for Laramie. I would imagine a second rounder at minimum. You can replace an offensive line starter with that second rounder too. So I do think that you can actually get two offensive linemen in a roundabout way for Laramie Tunsil.
I've seen his dead cap figure for 2025 is $25 million. So probably I would guess that is prohibitive of them making such a move. If you waited out a year, his cap hit or his dead cap hit drops all the way to 7.5 in 2026. But it feels like they're going to be riding out 2025 with Tunsil.
Let's see if you can do a post June 1st designation. No, you can't even do that. Even if you do it post June 1st, it's $9.5 million. So yeah, you're stuck with him next year. Let's rule that out completely.
No,
Laramie Tunsil will be the left tackle next year.
I mean, look, we see the cap goes up every single year. Like we're seeing teams like when they want to make moves, they move on from massive contracts.
But not massive contracts that are good players.
No, but if you're getting good assets in return, you could.
Yeah, but they're like going to be a team that expects to win their division. Like, you're not going to eat $25 million for a guy who's, even if we don't want to say top five left tackle, a top 10 left tackle, especially whenever it's an area, a unit of weakness. Now, if you could save his cap savings, and then you're getting at least a second rounder plus sweeteners, in that sense, it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm kind of with you, though. Like, I expect Laramie to be the left tackle, you know, next year. I'm open to the idea, like, even if they can find a cap workaround, I'm not opposed to it either. Really, it's the other four guys that I think we have to question of just, you know, what is their value to this team? Like, what is the system you're running? I mean, look, half these guys were drafted without ever seeing them work in a Kyle Shanahan offense. So now that Bobby Slowick has, you know, run it for 2 years, if none of them are fits in it, then none of them are fits in it. And you just have to replace as many of them as you possibly can. And then I still have to, like, wonder, you know, with the wide receiver position, I think you have to make pretty significant additions. Like, I know we were talking about Keenan Allen potentially there versus Diggs, but I think you have to add at least another wide receiver in this offseason to help CJ Stroud, because I don't personally expect to see Tank Dell this year. Like, maybe we will see him at the end of 2025, but I don't think you can bank on him at this point, and you can't run out there with Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson. You probably need to add like three guys, to be honest with you.
Yeah, at least two. At least two. Maybe two in like a guy you draft that's a flyer late and you hope that he hits. I was reading the wrong line on Laramie. You can actually, you would have a, yes, it would carry a 25 dead cap, but you would save just under $4 million in cap savings because of his cap number. So trading him would save you a little bit of money, but not enough to sign a starter. Now, if you designate it post June 1st and it's a trade, it actually saves you $21 million.
Mm.
A trade pre-June 1st. A trade pre-June 1st saves you 14. A trade post-June 1st saves you 21. But where the draft is at, you're probably doing it pre-June 1st. You're looking at a $14 million cap savings if you trade him. It's different if you were to cut him and move on from him. The one that's big to me, and look, they probably keep Laramie because Laramie is their best player on a bad offensive line. The one that sticks out to me is Titus Howard. Titus Howard, if you cut him post-June 1st, saves you $14 million. I think they're going to cut Titus Howard.
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm very pro-cutting Titus Howard. I think that is a player that, like, we have overvalued personally. And I know, like, even, you know, this weekend he comes in at third in the Pro Football Focus highest grades for the Houston Texans.
But it wasn't high. Like,
no,
it was third, but it still wasn't a high grade.
Yeah, it was a 71.8. And, I mean, Kendrick Green's ranked in front of him. Laramie Tunsil's number one. So, like, your top three guys are your offensive line from this weekend, which is – that's good. But He's given up a ton of pressures this year. Like, you look at some of the analytical stuff with Titus Howard. He just hasn't been great this year. And I'm not a Titus guy, and I think you mentioned this yesterday, Jeremy. The fact that they're so willing to move him to left guard when he's so adamant about being a tackle only, I think that he's also not going to want to be here either. And they drafted Blake Fisher for a reason. You can save $14 million. So you get a better guard or center. You roll with Blake Fisher at right tackle. You draft someone in the first or second round to play another interior spot. And then you sign a veteran. And you've probably fixed your offensive line and probably made it better.
Yeah, they have to me, it's wholesale changes. And while I do think it's unrealistic to move on from Laramie, and in this case, you'd have to be a trade, I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. Like, the dude's posting his autographed cleats immediately after they got beat 31-2. Like, sorry, man. Like, that offensive line, like, give me some dogs. Give me some mofos. Like, I don't know if Laramie Tunsil is that. I really don't. I think I think he's chill. I think he likes to be, you know, low-key. I think he's, you know, very, how do I want to say this? I mean, we know he likes to get a little high. We know he likes to get a little high.
You mentioned the gas mask?
How many people that you know that are, I'm not saying that Laramie's consistently, you know, using marijuana. I have no idea if he is. But if he were, how many potheads do you know that are docs? That you want to be your personal security? Just saying.
No, right. You're not wrong. I mean, like, I think I wouldn't be shocked if they – like, nothing would surprise me with the offensive line. I'll put it that way.
I don't think you can turn anything – I don't think you can take anything off the table.
It wouldn't shock me.
I don't think you can take anything off the table.
If Laramie is the one pushing to get out of here.
I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares where he's at, as long as he's being paid a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, look, this
like,
is –
that is obviously his motivation. Like, he was talking about – he re-signed with the Texans twice when they were bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his motivation is to be the highest paid player. And he's his own agent and all of that because that saves him some money. Like, his motivation is to be highly paid. And that's not – there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But it is – that is his motivation. Let's call it what it is.
Now, next year could be a contract year, technically.
For Laramie?
Yeah, because there's a potential out for 2026. So.
You do like him in a contract year. So it's like, a good time to have him.
Yeah. So, like, do you want him one more year just in the contract year, and then maybe you move on?
Yeah. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How do you get C.J. Stroud back on track next season? We say next season because we think this season is unrealistic. And what's your number one roster priority this offseason? 713-780-3776. It's Branham and George on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Let's talk about ESPN Bet inside LaBerge in Lake Charles. They've got the 24-foot video wall, great food cooked up by Chef Lyle. You can use the ESPN Bet app as soon as you cross into Louisiana. They got the 19 betting kiosks. So however you want to bet on your favorite teams, you can do when you're inside the sportsbook at ESPN Bet. Great time of year to go. The college football playoffs, but think about it. Coming up in January, we're going to have the college football semifinals on a Thursday and Friday, and then NFL playoff action on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. The perfect weekend to go to ESPN Bet into LaBerge. So when you want to leave Texans Bet on your Texas teams, make sure you do it at ESPN Bet inside LaBerge in Lake Charles.
ESPN 97.5.
Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
No Gallant today. I am Branham. Branham and Paul have been traded. It's now Branham and George, noon to 3 on ESPN 97.5. Brian sitting in. Still TBD where Brian ends up. On the Twitch, Z says Laramie Tunsil is a guy that takes no responsibility for his mistakes. He's big, loud, and outspoken. See, I don't think he's loud and outspoken. I feel like he's quiet and doesn't say much. And the O-line mentality starts with him first. He's the top-paid veteran on that O-line and probably prevents Stroud from speaking his mind. I don't think Stroud has a problem speaking his mind. He needs to go, but can you replace him? I'm not sure that you can. So that's where Z is on Laramie Tunsil. A few texts. For starters, on CJ, he needs to be a student in the film room in the offseason and during the year. We don't know that he's not. cut the podcast and celebrity events and focus on football. Also try to reverse the Amber Rose curse. Yeah, if he's going to do the podcast, he probably needed to play well because now it's a bad look, even though I feel like it's kind of silly. And he only gave Amber Rose a ride. He made that very clear. Another texter, number one priority needs to be a complete overhaul of the offensive staff. Ideally, Miami is silly enough to let McDaniel go. I would love Mike McDaniel. I feel like that's the pipe dream, quite frankly, where Miami's like, okay, we're moving on. I don't think that they will, but they're like, okay, we're moving on, and then you hire Mike McDaniel. To me, that's the pipe dream. To me, that's the number one wish for this offensive, you know, rebuild to try to get Stroud back on track.
Yeah, unfortunately, those contracts are tied. Him and Tua are almost hand in hand. Like, it's the best Tua's played by far with him as the head coach. I don't know why, if you're the Dolphins, you would think that someone else would come in if Tua is your quarterback going forward and get the same production that they've gotten out of him. And now they might be limited in how far this team can go, and we might have seen that, you know, maybe even last season. So eventually it could get there. That honestly like feels like what we're headed towards in 2026 for me. Is Mike McDaniel is the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans.
Well, you'd have to keep Slug for one more year, though.
I think they're going to.
Okay.
I don't want them to, but I think they're going to. I think Bobby Slowick will be the OC next year, and I think they will make changes at offensive line with the offensive line coach, and they will hope that it fixes issues that way, and that they think like that will be what solves CJ's problems. The other one that like I'm trying to find if it's still a thing or if he, because I thought I saw a rumor that once that CJ stopped working with Quincy Avery, the quarterback supposed guru. I would change gurus. All the quarterbacks he works with are terribly inaccurate. Deshaun Watson, Justin Fields, Jordan Love, CJ Stroud, like all these guys that Quincy Avery works with, I think are like usually wildly disappointing in terms of accuracy. So maybe like on like the offseason, find a different quarterback coach as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how much I can put faith in that. Like, I don't know if that's a reason that Stroud is struggling. I feel like that's very low on the totem pole, like the quarterback coach that you're working with. I'm not even sure they work together anymore.
Yeah, that's what I said I'm not sure. I know they worked together pre-draft, but if he still is working with them. And I know you like Gerard. Do you think that they need a different like name in the room, like instead for a quarterback coach where whatever they're working on with CJ is not, you know, translating to him?
It's just weird because you look, I think from a Slowick and Gerard point of view, they were highly praised for the rookie year that C.J. Stroud had.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're being heavily criticized for the sophomore year he's having. Which one is true? Like, which one is true? And is there more than that, those two elements, that lead to the lack of production that C.J. Stroud has had? Which is where I think that. I think it's more to do about the offensive line. I think the offensive line is easily the majority to blame for the lack of production we were expecting to see for C.J. Stroud. I think there are other variables. You know, I think Slowick's play calling maybe hasn't regressed, but maybe it's more magnified, the negative plays, than there were last year because Stroud had more time, could, you know, make things happen better because the offensive line protected better. You know, the skill position players weren't really better last year than they are this year, even with injury. Like, last year they had Nico, who missed a chunk of time. They had Tank Dell, who broke his fibula, who missed a chunk of time. Their best running back was Devin Singletary. He didn't even really get, like, starting reps until, like, week three, week four. Mm-hmm. Like, they were committed to Damian Pierce. You had the same tight end. So, like, I don't even think that the skill players have slacked off. I feel like CJ's had more skill around him this year than last year, actually.
I think that's why people are so concerned about like what's happening in front of them is that the offseason moves you made were Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs, your offensive line was healthy, Tank Dell is healthy. I think we all assumed it was going to improve. It's why there was so much hype about the Texans going into the year, because anything logically was that last year, that even though this year you had a tougher schedule, that with all the returning pieces, the development that would happen in the offseason, that the Texans would be ready to make that next jump. The jump that we've seen, you know, these young teams have from year one to year two, they were just logically the next team to do that. And then none of that happened. I think it's what we're saying here is the offensive line is going to change. The offensive line coach is going to change. And they're going to stick with Bobby Slowick. And, you know, I think there is real risk at that, because that means that the reality is if it doesn't work, you know, you're going into year four, the year that you can pay CJ Stroud with a new offensive coordinator, potentially another year of like mid football, which we saw this year, D'Amico Ryans is going into his fourth year. Like, that's when you want to make the offensive coordinator change? Because typically that feels to me like a, you know, if it was any other organization, I would say that's concerning that you're making that offensive coordinator change at that time, because typically that means your coach is on the hot seat.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
That's why I think I'd make the change now. But it really feels like, based on what DJ told Paul and I earlier in the year, what Lance tweeted the other day, that people who are in the know are confident that Bobby Slowick's going to be back.
Yeah, I'm more on the overhaul of the offensive staff completely. Like, I'm ready for wholesale changes across the board, quite frankly. So, you know, offensive line, wholesale changes offensively, skill position needs to be fixed. What would be your number one priority this offseason for the Texans?
I do think it is, like, the second wide receiver outside of the offensive line. Because I think we've covered that, and I think it's clear we both view the offensive line and the offensive line coach as your number one priority. So I think the next one, I think identifying who the second wide receiver is going to be for the Houston Texans. Because, you know, I even if it's Diggs or Allen, like, I think at best, like, you want those guys to be your third option with what we've seen from both of them this year. Like, they haven't been explosive. So whether you're looking at the draft or something else in free agency that's reasonable, like, obviously they're not going to be in the T. Higgins market and things like that. But I think wide receiver, you know, because of the injuries that have occurred to this team, unfortunately have to be a priority again in the offseason, even though you have other areas you need to fix.
I think you can balance it out, like, with I think you can balance it out with more of a variety of skill. Like, I don't think that you need this collection of top talent per se. Like, Nico's your guy, right? Like, he's your number one. Like, we all know that now. There's no doubt about it. Nico Collins is your top receiver. I think you need a possession guy, and I think you need a speed guy that can take the top off of defense. I think that helps an offensive play caller. I think it helps an offense entirely. Like, you look at the Lions. Like, the Lions receivers specifically, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown is their dude, right? And then they have Jameson Williams that can take the top off the defense. Their possession guy, probably Amon-Ra, and then also Sam Laporta, and then Gibbs can help you in the backfield there. Like, I don't think that you need to spend tons of money or resources in receivers. I think that you need a balanced, versatile group next to Nico Collins. I think you need a possession guy next to Nico Collins, and I think you need a burner that can take the top off of defense next to Nico Collins. And then you probably need to help a little bit with Joe Mixon in the running back room. And, you know, like, a fourth rounder. Like, look what some of these rookie running backs are doing that were drafted in the mid rounds. Like, you don't need a dude that's going to come in and take Joe Mixon's job. You need a guy that can help you a little bit offensively, and then maybe eventually in a couple of years take Joe Mixon's job. So I think that you can do it, like, wisely without spending tons of resources, whether it's finances or draft capital, doing it.
Yeah, and I was going to go along that running back line as well, because I think what we've seen this year, where teams are having to adjust to the too high safety looks, teams taking away the deep pass, is that teams with the great running backs are having a lot of success. We've seen what happened. I mean, Josh Jacobs has had a career rejuvenation there in Green Bay. Derrick Henry obviously has beat Father Time once again. The Texans need more than one running back who they can trust to hand the ball to, because Joe Mixon, like most running backs, especially running backs of a certain age, is going to miss a few games. He's missed three games this year. And when he's out, I mean, between Damian Pierce and Dare, they don't have a running back you want to give the ball to, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 times if Joe Mixon is unavailable, or if you're just trying to save him some reps because he's an older running back. So I'd like to see them through the draft, maybe with a kind of a low-cost free agent, address the running back depth. And then, like you guys laid out, I don't think you need to spend super big at wide receiver. I mean, we saw on the Texans, and this is going back obviously a couple regimes now, but they've had success in the passing game before with one good wide receiver, and then filling that out with the role players, the possession guy, the deep down the field guy, like you mentioned. Andre Johnson, who was the second best wide receiver next to him all those years in Houston. Kevin Walter, it wasn't some high price guy. I mean, D-Hop didn't come in until I think his second to last year in Houston. So I don't think you have to spend big at wide receiver, and I'd like to see them add some depth with at running back.
What about D-Hop as the possession guy?
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
That'd be a fun story.
It would. I'm all for him, Keenan, Diggs, all these names. Yeah, like, find some geezer who's 31 that you can get it at a decent value, and then add somebody like the third round or something, and make it happen.
Yeah, sure-handed guy that you can trust on third and fives, and then a guy that's a burner that you have to respect. And if you don't, he's going to catch, you know, a 70-yard touchdown once every three games. Like, I think that's how you fill out the receiver room without having to be, like, super costly at it, because the offensive line's the primary issue. And then the luxury that you do have for Casario is the defense is kind of like, everybody's kind of coming back, you know? Like, Anderson and Hunter under contracts, the interior defensive tackles, I'm not sure there, but they've proven that they can go out and find those guys. Azeez is under contract. Harris is under contract. Stingley, Lassiter, Bullock, Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie's even under contract. Like, so your defense is kind of all coming back. You'll need to help, like, the depth, but you don't really need to go spend a ton of money or draft picks on the defense side of the ball. Although I don't want to draft offensive linemen. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line real quick before we get to Adam Ronis. Larry, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. It's just like, everybody just needs to relax. It's CJ's second year. Yeah, defenses are going to adapt to him. Plus, there's numerous injuries on the team. Nobody's talking about the coach for the Niners getting fired. Now, with all those injuries, they're going to adapt. They're going to come back strong in the third season. Yeah, they need a new, some few pieces. But without receivers, they hardly have anything. I want y'all's thoughts.
I think we're pretty relaxed. I mean, we're talking about him bouncing back in year three. No one's saying that C.J. Stroud's not the franchise quarterback.
And we're not part of the small, loud portion of people on Twitter saying fire D'Amico. Also, Kyle Shanahan also has gone to a Super Bowl, so it's a little different.
I feel like we were having a fair, realistic conversation about C.J. Stroud, who's had a lack of productivity this season, but we still feel like is the franchise quarterback for the Texans that just needs a little bit of help. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Adam Ronis, Dub Club fantasy guru. He's going to help you win your fantasy football championship this weekend. He's next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Loaded Rain Rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to tracemineralz.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.